Okay, we're going to begin here at the top of Zayin Amud Aleph, about six lines down. Yesterday we left off the Gemara with the Gemara discussing about when is the proper time for Bitul. And the Gemara came to the conclusion that one can only do Bitul when it's not Zman Yisura. Now the Gemara is six lines down and Zayin says, is that really the case? Levata Yisura lo matzi mevatale? After the Zman Yisur, you can't do Bitul? Vatanyo, we have a Baraita. Hayoshev Beit HaMidrash, v'nizkar sheyesh chametz b'toch Bitul. He's sitting in the Beit Midrash, and all of a sudden he remembers that he has chametz in his house. Mevatlo belibo. He can do the bitul in his heart. Echad Shabbat v'echad Yom Tov. Whether it's Shabbat, whether it's Yom Tov, he can do the bitul. Now Gemara says, Bishlamo Shabbat mishkachalo. I understand how you can come up with a case of Shabbat. Kagon shechal arbas aliyot b'Shabbat. When Erev Pesach is Shabbat. So then I understand how you have a Zman ahead there, which also has the possibility of doing bitul on Shabbat. Elo Yom Tov. Yom Tov, by definition, is Bator Yisurohu. If you're doing Bitul on Yom Tov, you're for sure after the Zman HaYisur. So, Ma'acha Bar Yaakov, Hocho, B'talmid Yoshev Lifnei Bria Bo Askinon. This is a particular case. We have an individual sitting in front of his Rebbe. V'nizkar Sheish Isa Migulgelet B'toch Beito. And all of a sudden, he remembers that he has this dough in his house that was kneaded and that was left there and needs to be baked or needs to be made into Matzah. Umitiare Shema Tachmitz. And he's afraid if he leaves it, it'll turn into chametz. So what does he do? Kadaim umavatele mikami de tachmi. So he goes ahead and he does the bitul before it reaches the point of chimutz, before it reaches the point of chametz. So yes, it's in Zman HaYisur, but he's not doing it to something that is Isur. The object of Shav, the object now, the Tzah itself right now is not chametz. So he does the bitul prior to it becoming chametz in order that if it does become chametz, he won't have a problem. Take a nami. We can medayek that from the case itself. Tiktani. Yoshev b'toch beit midrash. He's sitting in the beit midrash. What's the significance of the fact that he's sitting in the beit midrash? If it's a case that's already chametz, why does it matter that he's in the beit midrash? No matter where he is, he has the same issue, has the same problem. He's got to deal with it. The fact that he's sitting in the Beit Midrash is telling us information. What information is that? That he doesn't have the ability to leave right now. He doesn't have the ability to deal with it now. Since he doesn't have the ability to deal with it now, that's why he's doing Bitul. And so that is based on the explanation we just gave. It's a Talmid Yoshev Lifnei Rabo. He's afraid to leave. It's not respectful. It's not the proper conduct to leave while his Rebbe is giving Shir. And so because of that, he stays. But if he does that, then he risks what's in his house turning into chametz. And so because of that, he does bitul in order to protect from that becoming chametz shmamina. So yes, this bitul is done bizmana yisur, but not to an object that is yisur, and that's why it is permissible. That is why the bitul works in this instance. Amar Rava bar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, apat shibsha. You have bread or matzah that's gone bad. Kevin shirabto matzah muteret. As long as there's more matzah, it's mutar. Hechi dami. What's the case over here? So now the case itself, or what seems to be the case in the Gemara, is that we have a teva, we have some sort of box, in which an individual stores items. So he uses this box to store both chametz and to store matzah. Now all of a sudden he opens up the box and he sees in there pachipsha. He sees in there something that's gone bad. And he's uncertain as to whether the object is chametz or matzah. So now, we seems from this Gemara, from the statement that Kevin Shirabta Matah Muteret, as long as the rove is Matzah, then it's Mutar. Hey Chidami, what's the case here? If he knows for certain that it is Chameit, Kirabta Matzah, my hobby. Just because you have more Matzah, why does it make a difference? Why does the rove matter if you know for certain that you're dealing with Chameits over here? Must be that he doesn't know that it's Chameits. Imatzahu, or it's Matzah. My area, ki rabta matzah. Why does it matter what the rove is? I feel like lo rabta matzah nami. Even if matzah is not the rove, nezel bater batro. Should go after what was in there last. The assumption being that whatever was there last is the object that is there currently. Because whatever was put on first, he uses first or utilizes first. It's a FIFO system, first in, first out. So whatever he puts in there first, he's going to take out. Whatever's left behind is the last item that was there. So since we're now in Pesach, the assumption will be that the last object there was matzah, and should be irrelevant what the rove utility of this box was. Even if it was rove used for chametz, nevertheless, if the last item that was put in there was matzah, then we should assume the item in front of us is matzah. Milo tanan. Don't we have a mishnah with regards to shkalim? Ma'ot shenimtzu lifnei socharei behema. You have money that is found in front of animal merchants in Yerushalayim. Lo'olam ma'aser. The money that you find on the floor there is always considered to be maser or maser behema. Rashi says because we have a choice here. The money is either chulin or it's maser. And therefore we're going to go to chumra. Misveka, we'll put it maser. We'll assume that it's problematic. Tosafot says he doesn't think that's the right way to look at this. Because if that was really the case, then you really have a robe that's chulin. Because you could then put together with that safek, the robe of money in the world that is chulin, you put those together and you'd have a robe that's chulin, and that would not be a good halachic conclusion. But rather, he says that when you have the money in front of the sellers of Behemoth in Yerushalayim, you have multiple buyers that are coming to buy from this one seller. So yes, the money in the hands of the seller is chulin, but the buyer's money is maser. And since there are more buyers than sellers, the likelihood is the money that's here is maser. The reason for that is that the robe of the money that's brought into Yerushalayim is maser behema, is money that needs to be utilized or paid towards buying animals for putting on the mizbeach. And that is because it's probably ma'ot maser sheni. And even if the people do not finish their ma'ot maser sheni while they're in Yerushalayim, they give it to the residents of Yerushalayim. And then the residents of Yerushalayim utilize that ma'ot maser sheni. And the best way to utilize your ma'ot maser sheni is to buy a shlamim with it. So the likelihood is that money that's found in front of those that are selling behemot is likely ma'ot maser sheni. Bahar HaBayit, if you find money on Har HaBayit, we assume that it is chulin. B'Yerushalayim, on the other hand, Yerushalayim b'shat haregel maser. If it's on Yom Tov or the regalim, then we assume it's maser. B'shar Yemot HaShana chulin. The rest of the year, it's considered to be chulin. So we have three different dinim here. One is ma'ot, shenim tzu lefnei sochrei behema, money's found in front of the animal merchants, Har HaBayit, and in the shukei or shavakei Yerushalayim, in the marketplaces of Yerushalayim. And each of them has a different din. And why is that? V'amar Rav Shmaya bar Zera, my time. What's the reason for this din? Ho'il vit shukei Yerushalayim asuin litchabed b'chol yom. That the marketplaces of Yerushalayim were swept up on a daily basis. Rashi says they were swept up on a daily basis because they have mipnei atit, that there was dirt or cement or things that got left on the ground, they swept them up. Alma, the conclusion from this is, amreinan kamai kamai azle, whatever was there before is gone. And what's here now is something else. Hachanami, so too in our case. Neima kama kama azil, whatever was there before in this box is gone. V'hai de'ayidno, and whatever's in there now is the most current. So basically, let's go back to this Mishnah and Maaser Sheni and let's understand it. There are three locations again. In front of the Socharei Behema, we say the money that's there is always Ma'ot Maaser Sheni because the transactions or the purchasers are most likely carrying Ma'ot Maaser Sheni. And therefore, any money, any time of the year is considered to be Ma'ot Maaser in front of these merchants. Har HaBayit does not get swept. The reason the Gemara in Shkalim tells us the reason that it does not get swept is, first of all, it was on a slant. And number two is that it was very high up, and therefore it was wind swept. Since it was wind swept, plus there's also a restriction against wearing shoes or bringing the dust on your feet onto Har HaBayit. So if I take the combination of people not walking there with their shoes or dust on their feet, plus that it's wind swept, I do not need to sweep the Har HaBayit every day. That means if I find money on Har HaBayit, it's possible that money came from any time of the year. So if I look at the year as a whole, the rove of the year, the money in Yerushalayim is chulin. The money that enters into Yerushalayim is chulin. Yes, on the regel, when it comes into Yom Tov, the robe of the money there is maser, or money that is hektesh. On the other hand, ma'ot, during the rest of the year, most likely is chulin. So in Har HaBayit, I find a coin, I find money on Har HaBayit, the assumption is it came from any time during the year. Any time during the year means that the robe is chulin. Robe is chulin, that means that what you find on Har HaBayit is chulin. What's interesting is, we know from the Gemara in Brachot that one is not allowed to take money or their wallet onto Har HaBayit. So how is their money on Har HaBayit? So the Reed says something very interesting over here. He says, "Deinu asur elahecha denos an b'farhesia b'stino." It's only when he takes it in his cloak in an obvious manner, showing as if he's going to do transactions, as if he's going to purchase something. But if a person takes on money b'tzina, then it's not problematic. It's a big chiddush of the Reed that taking the money onto Har HaBayit is only restricted if it's done in an open or public manner where it looks like you're going to transact or you're going to do business, which is inappropriate on Har HaBayit. Whereas if it's hidden, Right, so even though on the side of Har HaBayit, on the areas of Har HaBayit that may not have been Mikudash, they did have areas where you purchased your Karbanot, where you purchased your Nesachim, so there was money on Har HaBayit on those sides, but on the center areas where there is a restriction from bringing on your wallet, there only if it's brought out in the open. But if it's brought in a closed or hidden manner, then it's not an issue, according to the Ri. And that's how you end up with this money on Har HaBayit. Now, what's the rule with regards to Yerushalayim? Regards to Yerushalayim, we say that it's a daily event. Depends which day. If you find it during the regel, then alarov it's maser. You find it the rest of the year, alarov it's kulin. So why does it make a difference? So that the answer is that they sweep the streets of Yerushalayim every day. So the assumption being that if money fell on any given day, it would be found by the sweepers. It'd be gone by the next day. So when I look at every piece of money, or if I look at any discrete object, I have to look at that object in isolation and not in consideration of the context of the whole year. Because whatever was there before was gone, and whatever's here now came in the most recent past. And therefore, it depends on what the day is. If it's the rest of the year, chulin. If it's the regel, then it's maser. But what we see from the din of Yerushalayim, or the shukei Yerushalayim, shvakei Yerushalayim, is that we go by batar batro. We go after the last item that's there, because everything was swept away. And therefore, what's left here has got to be the most recent item. And so we should say the same thing by our teva here. Our little box over here, the person definitely did bidikah on Erev Pesach. The person most likely cleans it out all the time. And so whatever's found here should be based on the last thing that he engaged with. And that's most likely matzah. Where it says, shani hocho. Our case is a little different. De'ipusha mochia achilave. Because it's rotten or it's gone bad, it's moldy, that already indicates that it's been there for duration. It's been there for a longer period of time. So you can't just say, oh, it's the last thing that's here, because it's already got some mold on it. Mold on it says it's been here a little longer than we thought. Mar says, I pusha mochiach ilave, if it is moldy and if it has gone bad, and that proves that it's been there for a long duration, kirabta matzah my havi. Just because you had more matzah, why does that help the situation? Because the ipusha, the rot or the mold, already indicates that it has nothing to do with the rov. It has to do with something that's been there for a long duration. So Amar Rabba, lo tema shirabto matzah. Don't say that the row of items that was placed into this teva was matzah. Ela ema shirabu yemetz matzah ilave. A number of days of matzah have already passed by. In other words, we're already into Pesach. We're deep into Pesach. So if you're deep into Pesach, then the ipusha, the moldiness, or the rotting of the bread is not necessarily an indication that it came from before Pesach. Because now we've already gone through a number of days of Pesach, and going through a number of days of Pesach, then it's possible that the ipusha was caused even from something that was placed there after the beginning of Pesach. So Gemara says, Yehochi Pshita. If that's the case, then it's simple. Then it obviously came from Pesach. So Gemara says, Lo, Tzricha. Di ipusha merubah. It's a case where it's got a lot of mold on it, got a lot of rot on it. So then, even though maybe we're on the seventh day of Pesach, and it's possible that it came from Pesach, the fact that there's so much on it, maybe it came from even beforehand. So Gemara says, Ma'od tema came to ipusha merubah, since it's got a lot of rot, a lot of mold on it. Igle milta devadai chametz ma'alyuhu. So let us assume for sure it's chametz, because it must have come from before Pesach. Kamash malon. No, kevin shirabu yamei matzah ilavei. Since we've already had a number of days of Pesach already passed by, Arminian kol yoma v'yoma nema chamima afa. That every day he cooked fresh bread, he baked fresh bread, and he placed it into the teva. Vishada ilavei, and he placed it on top of it. V'ipsha tvei, and that caused an acceleration of the moldiness or the rotting of this bread. So because of that, it's possible that you have a lot of rot, but it's still not indicative of the fact that it was there from before Pesach. Because even though you have an accelerated deterioration of the bread, that could be caused by the hot bread that you put in there every day, or the hot matzah that you put in there every day. So just because it's accelerated in its deterioration doesn't mean that it came from before Pesach, because already a number of days deep into Pesach, and it could be it's from Pesach, and the acceleration is because of the hot items that you put in there every day, or it could be because it's from beforehand. So since we have this possibility that it was from Pesach, we go batar batro, and we assume that it is matzah. Mar says, umiyazlinim batar batro. Is this principle really true, that we always go after the last thing? Vatanyo. Don't we have a brayta? Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, teva shenishtamshu ba ma'ot chulin. You have some sort of box, storage box, money box, that you store money in it. Chulin money in it. Umaut maser. And you also store money of maser in it. Imrov chulin. If the rov of the money that's found in there is chulin, then what you find there now is, well, then, imrov maser, if the rov, the majority of the money that you store there is maser, maser. So if you go into the box and you find coins that you're uncertain as to whether the chulin or maser, we go, but the rov, we go after what the majority of what you use this box for in terms of storage. V'amai. Why is that the case? Lizil batar batro. Why don't we go after the last thing he used the box for? Because clearly, he would have cleared out all the money from the previous storage. And when he put the new money in, that should be what dictates what is there now. So, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak HaChamai Eskinan, what's the case there? Kegon shenishtam shuba ma'ot chulin u'ma'ot maser. He used it for both, simultaneously. In one corner he had chulin, one corner he had maser. Ben Yudea is a man bisof, so he doesn't know which one was last. There is no batar batro over here. So you can't invoke batar batro over here because it's not determinant. Both of them were there. So then we have to look for something else to solve a problem, and that's what we look to Rov for. Rav Zvida Amar, Kegon shenishtam shuba tziburim tziburim. He used it piled up, lots of piles together. And since he used up all these piles, he has maser in this corner and chulin in this corner. And on one day, they were simultaneous. They both are at the same time. So again, it's not determinant in terms of batar batro. Rav, papa mar, kagon de ishtakach beguma. There's a crack or there's some sort of hole inside of the box and there's a coin caught in there. Well, since the coin is caught in there, it's not clear that it came batar batro. If it's found in the main area of the box, then we'll assume that the last item that you put in there, that's what it came from. But here it's caught somewhere in the box. It's possible that it was overlooked a number of times. And you could have put money in there a number of times. This could be from a previous time of using or utilizing the box because it's caught in this little crack that you might not have noticed. So since you might not have noticed it, you can't guarantee that it's batar batra that came from the last money that was placed in there. As opposed to the box, when you use it for the matzah, use it for the chametz, there every time you look in it, you clear out whatever's inside of there. Or we did bedika coming into Pesach, so you definitely cleared it out. So when you know you cleared it out, then we can talk about batar batra. Over here, when you're talking about something that's caught in a little crack or a little hole over there, then it's possible that the coin was there for a number of cycles, and you just didn't notice it. And since you didn't notice it, batar batra is not relevant in this case. So ein hachanami, batar batra is the din that is koveya, that is the halacha that we would follow when batar batra matters. So if in a case where it doesn't matter, for instance, they're used simultaneously, or in a case where there's a possibility of something being caught in there that you wouldn't have noticed, then batar batra becomes irrelevant. We have to use other items like rov to determine what the status of this item is. But ein hachanami, you go batar batra. And that's the din that we found here by Pachi Ipsha. We found this bread that was moldy or rotten. We go batar batra. The only question here is that it's already rotten or moldy. And that indicates that it's been there for a duration of time. Since we have what we call Rabta Yemea Pesach, that already part of Pesach has passed, so it's possible it was done for Pesach. But since it's rotten or moldy so much, we thought maybe it came from before Pesach. Mashmalan, we don't say that. We assume that it came from Pesach. And the reason that it has this accelerated deterioration is because of the nature of putting hot items on top of it caused it to accelerate in its deterioration. There's no problem with it. It's just that that is a siman. That's a sign that it might have come from prior to this point in time. The rotting is an indication that you can't assume it was the last item that you put in there. The last item you put in there should be fresh. The fact that it's already rotted is an indication it should have come from something that's a lot before that. And so that's the problem. The ipsha inherently is not the problem. The ipsha is just an indication that it might have come from something much earlier. And we have to say, what does that indicate to us? The fact that it's rotten, does that automatically tell us that it's for sure from there, from before Pesach? If you find something that's rotten on the first day of Pesach, it was clearly there from before Pesach. It's most likely chametz. You find that on the 6th, 7th day of Pesach, then we're in the situation which our Gemara is speaking about, which the rotten could have come on Pesach itself or from before Pesach. That Memra tells us, yeah, that we assume it came from Pesach itself. All right, Amar Rav Yehuda, habodek tzarich shivarech. We've been speaking about now that there's a mitzvah of doing bedikah, the Or HaNer, on the night of the 14th. Here we have Rav Yehuda tell us that someone who does bedikah has to make a brocha before they do bedikah. Mayim b'vorech. What brocha do you make when you do bedikah? Rav Papi Amar Mishmei Derava, he says, Omer leva'er chametz. You make the brocha, asher kedishanu mitzvotav v'tzivanu leva'er chametz. Rav Papa Amar Mishmei Derava, so here instead of Rav Papi, it's Rav Papa, al biur chametz. Asher kedishanu mitzvotav v'tzivanu al biur chametz. The Rishonim, if you look in the Rif or the Rosh, they have the authors reversed. Rav Papi and Rav Papa reversed. Not as important as actually what they say, which is here we have a machloket of whether you should say leva'er chametz or al biur chametz. So now the Gemara says something interesting. Bilu va'er, If you use livaer, kuli amalo plige, divadi lahaba mashma. Livaer is a verb which indicates that I will do something in the future. I will eliminate it in the future. I will do bedika in the future. And therefore, it would be completely appropriate to use livaer over here. The question comes up, which is kiplige, with the meaning of albiur. When I use the term albiur, marsavra mi karamashma, albiur chametz, one of them thinks that it means I already did it. Albiur chametz means something that I've already completed. Whereas the other one, umarsavra the haba mashma, the other one thinks that it means that in the future I will complete it. It also has the meaning of the future. Now, as the Rabbeinu Tam points out, that even the manda amar, that shalavar mashma, says that it means in the past, has to agree that it has a little bit of a meaning of lahaba, because we are going to utilize it in certain cases. And we have brachot that use the word al in it. So it's clear that everybody agrees that it means the future as well. Question is, what's the primary usage of albiur? Does albiur primarily mean in the future, or does it primarily mean in the past? Bilavair, if you just use the word bilavair, then everybody agrees then that should mean the future, and you shouldn't have any problem with using bilavair. We'll come back to this at the conclusion of the Gemara to understand what the question is then. If everybody agrees bilivayer, then it should be obvious what the answer is over here. Say livayer chametz. Why are we even discussing why you should say albiur chametz? Why enter ourselves into a problematic formulation when we have a formulation that works very easily, which is livayer chametz? So when we come to the conclusion of the Gemara, we'll come back and discuss that. What's interesting over here is the Tosafot. Tosafot quotes over here, Mikana ya matzrich rashba levarech lifnei hamila lachniso bibito shel Avraham Avinu. It says, based on our Gemara over here, le means for the future. And that means that you must make a bracha that has le in it before you perform the mitzvah. Well, he gives the example of mila. On mila, we make two brachot. We wait one bracha, which is ala mila, and we make another bracha, which is lachniso bibito shel Avraham Avinu. So here the Rashba says, I have to say lachniso bibito shel Avraham Avinu before the performance of the mila. Because if I don't say it before the performance of the milah, it's incorrect. The grammar that I'm using is incorrect because I'm saying lehachniso, that I will bring him into the prit of Avraham Avinu. So it must precede the mitzvah in order to be the correct formulation. And therefore he demanded that you make it overly asiatan, that you make it prior to the milah. Velo nira l'Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam disagrees. And he says that mashma the lachar mila mikomo, based on the Gemara that we saw in Kuflam Mitzayinam with Bet and Shabbat and Perk Rabbi Ezer, the mila, it sounds like lachniso bibito shel Avraham Avinu is made after the mila is performed. Afagav the lachniso mashma the haba. But then what does he do with the fact that lachniso means in the future? It says lokasha, that's not a problem. The lo alzot hanaseh achshav mivarech. He's not making the bracha on the maseh amila. Ela mishabeach umodela kodesh baruch hu. He's giving praise to Hashem for giving us this opportunity to do this mitzvah. Then when he has the opportunity to do it, so then why is it over here? The galot, to show or that we're really doing this milah, the shem Hashem, and not to the shem avodah zarah, not the shem hargrizim, but that the milah is dedicated to Hashem. The only time you have to say the bracha before the mitzvah is when you are the one performing the mitzvah. When someone else is making the bracha, lo. So in this case, the mohel does the milah. Father of the child makes the bracha of the hakniso b'rito shel Avraham Avinu. So he has no requirement to say it before the performance of brit milah. And lachniso, that's written in the haba, that's written about the atid in the future, is about our shevach, our praise to Hashem for allowing us to perform such a mitzvah and the dedication of that mitzvah to Hashem. And he says, V'teida, I can prove that to you because of Birkat Erusin. You go to any wedding, and then they make the bracha Birkat Erusin after the fact. You do the Erusin, and then you make the bracha of Erusin. How can you make the bracha after the fact? So here he proves from it, because the one who's making the bracha is not the Mikadesh, but rather the Misader Kedushin. And since that's the case, he can say it afterwards. And this is the Rabbeinu Tam l'shitato, that the Birkat Erusin is a Birkat HaMitzvah. That when one gets married, the Bracha of Erusin is a Birkat HaMitzvah, because there's a mitzvah of Kiddushin. Kiddushin is a mitzvah for a person. In order to accomplish mitzvah peruvah, one has to get married. And therefore, Kiddushin in itself is a mitzvah. And this is considered to be a Birkat HaMitzvah. The Rosh in Kiddushin disagrees with the Rabbeinu Tam and says that you don't have to do Kiddushin in order to accomplish Pru Urvu. Pru Urvu is a mitzvah. Kiddushin is just a hechi timtze, but it's not the only way you can do it. A person can marry a pilegesh and accomplish Pru Urvu without ever having Kiddushin. So Kiddushin is not inherently a mitzvah, and therefore the Rosh believes that Birkat Erusin is Shevach V'Hoda'ah, is praise to Hashem, not a Birkat HaMitzvah, and that's why you make it after the fact. And he would answer probably the same thing over here with regards to Lachniso B'Bito Shel Am Avinu. It's not a Birkat HaMitzvah. It's a Birkat Shevach V'Hoda'ah. The Birkat of Shevach and praise to Hashem, not a Birkat HaMitzvah, and that's why you can make it after the fact. Now, that brings us to the question about why we do make the bracha of Lachniso B'Bito Shel Am Avinu after the fact. So there are three different approaches you can take. We've just explained two of them. One is that Birkat HaMitzvah can be said after the fact. That's the Rabbeinu Tam. It's a Birkat HaMitzvah that involves Shevach, and it's done by a person not performing the mitzvah. It can be done after the mitzvah itself, and that's the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains it. The Rosh, or others, could explain that Lachniso B'Bito Shel Am Avinu is simply a Birkat HaShevach. It's praise to Hashem. Has nothing to do with Birkat HaMitzvah, and that's why you say it after the Milah. It doesn't have to be before the Milah, because it's not Birkat HaMitzvah. There is a third approach that is brought by Rav Soloveitchik. He's Mechadesh this with regards to Birkat HaMilah. He says it here by Birkat HaMilah. He says it also by Birkat Erusin, and he also says it by Birkat Tefillin. And that is that there are two aspects to Milah, two aspects to Erusin, two aspects to wearing Tefillin. And that is Milah involves an active mitzvah. That's a mitzvah to perform the milah. And there's a second mitzvah, which is to be mahul. And that is that the chalut shem mahul, that the individual now is an individual who is mahul and has joined Kalal Yisrael, has elevated in Kedusha, that in itself is significant. And each bracha relates to one of those items. Birkat HaMilah, ala milah, relates to the aspect of doing the mitzvah, the active mitzvah of performing milah. Lachniso B'Bito Shel Am Avinu relates to the other side of it, which is the change in the status of the individual to being mahul now. Someone who is part of Klal Yisrael has Kedushat Klal Yisrael. The same is true by Tefillin. We make two brachot on Tefillin, which is very controversial. It's Machloket HaRishonim. We as Ashkenazim do make that bracha. We make La'aniach Tefillin on Shel Yad, and Al Mitzvah Tefillin on LaRosh. Why do we make a separate bracha on LaRosh? So Rav Soloveitchik says the same thing over there. La'aniach Tefillin is the Birkat HaMitzvah. That's performing the mitzvah, putting one's tefillin on them. The second bracha is the chalut shem tefillin. A person wearing tefillin is different than the person who's not wearing tefillin. There are many memorot in the Gemara that are evidence of that fact, including the one that we've seen just recently, which is that when putting a person on the tefillin shorosh, we say, we quote the pasuk, Vereu kol mei aretz. Everyone will see you, Vereu mimecha, and they'll be afraid of you. Why? Because you have tefillin shorosh, elu tefillin shorosh. The tefillin shorosh on the individual changes the individual to a person who's wearing tefillin. A person wearing tefillin is a different person than a person that's not wearing tefillin. It imbues them with kedusha. It changes their nature. It changes the way that they conduct themselves and the way they have to think. So we have birkat laniach tefillin, which is al mitzvah, the mitzvah putting on the tefillin. And we have the al mitzvah tefillin, which is al arosh, which is about the chalut shem tefillin on the individual with tefillin on. And the same is true with erusin. Erusin, whether you think it's a mitzvah or not, there is a change in status that is accorded by the Erusin. So the Brachat Erusin doesn't necessarily have to be on the mitzvah of Kiddushin. It can be on that changed status of the individuals involved. Now that there's Erusin, they've entered into the covenant of Kiddushah, Kiddushin of Klal Yisrael, and that requires a bracha. And that's one of the ways to explain why we say Lachniso B'Bito Shel Am Avinu after the fact, and why there is a second bracha in this case. So again, three approaches to why we say Lachniso B'Bito Shel Am Avinu after the fact. Either because it's a Birkat HaMitzvah and it's okay, Rabbeinu Tam, Birkat Shevach Hodah like the Rosh, or like Rav Soloveitchik suggests over here, that it's a bracha on the Chalut Shem Milah. Alright, Meitave, Baruch Asher Kiddishanu B'Mitzvotav V'Tzivanu Ala Milah. So here you make the bracha Ala Milah, and you make the Ala Milah, and you're about to perform the Mitzvah of Milah. So it shows you that Ala Milah means in the future. Gemara says, Hata Mecha Neima. Wait a minute. Over there, we have no choice. Neima Lamul. So what do you want him to say? Lamul with the Lamed? Lo Sagya de Lo Ihu Mahil. Wait a minute. The obligation is not on the individual who's doing the Mila. The assumption being here that the Moel, that the person doing the Mila is the Moel, not the father of the child. And since the Moel is doing it, he's not obligated in doing a Mila here. He's just doing it as a proxy or an agent for the father. So if he doesn't want to do the milah, that's not a problem. He's not the one who's obligated to say lamul, that he has to say, I must do the milah. So that's why he can't say lamul. Rashi says over here that oto rofe amalot kol bnei ha'ir, that the doctor that does the milah for all the people in the city. There's the doctor, the moel, whoever it is that does the milah for everyone, but he himself is not the one that's obligated in the mitzvah over here. So you can't say lamul, because lamul indicates or implies that you yourself are the one obligated and demanded to do the mitzvah. And that's not true of the one doing it here, because he's only an agent or a proxy. So Gemara says, okay, then what about Aviya Ben? What are you going to do about the father of the child? What happens if the father of the child does the milah? Forget about the mul. The father of the child does it. Ma'ik lameimar. What are you going to say in that case? In that case, he should say lamul. Gemara says, ein hachanami. You're right. Say lamul. The father of the child should say lamul. That's the way the Rambam paskins, that if the father of the child does the milah, you should say lamul. Ashkenazim don't paskin that way. We'll see in Rashi later on that we don't paskin in that manner. But according to the Gemara here, the father of the child should say lamul because he is the one obligated in it. Meitve, next question. Baruch asher kedishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al ha-shechita. Wait a minute. Hatam nami. Why don't we say lishchot? Why are you saying al ha-shechita? So Gemara says, hey, chenema. What's your choice over here? Nema lishchot? You want him to say lishchot? Lo sagid laviyu shachat. Who says you're obligated to eat meat and to do shechita? You don't have to do shechita. You don't want to eat meat? You don't need shechita. There's no obligation to do shechita. So say lishchot means I'm obligated to do shechita. That's not the case. The case is that if I want to eat meat, I need to do shechita. So if that's the case, I can't make a bracha of lishchot. So in this case, Gemara says, what about Pesach v'kodoshim? When you're dealing with korbanot, where there is an obligation on you to do shechita, there you don't have a choice. You can't say, oh, if I want to, I don't want to. There you have to do it. You must bring the korban of Pesach. You must bring the kodoshim. And there you must do shechita. There's a tzibui for you to do shechita. Ma'ikal meimar. What are you going to say there? Gemara says, ein hachanami. Over there, you should say lishchot. You should say lishchot and not al shechita in that case. Just in brief, there's a machloket in the Rishonim about how to deal with shechita. There is a mitzvah to do shechita. It just may not be an incumbent mitzvah. There's also a mitzvah in the Torah, one of the target mitzvot, to give a get. That doesn't mean you're obligated to give a get. That means if you want to divorce one's wife, you have to give a get. If you want to eat meat, you have to do shechita. Now, the question that you're asking might also relate to a machloket in the Rishonim as to whether shechita is simply a matir, like we're describing it right now. You want to eat meat, you need to do shechita. There's a possibility in the Rishonim, among the Tosafot and others, that suggest that shechita itself might be a mitzvah, that something that is ishachut, something that's not shachut, is asur. And therefore, there's a mitzvah to do shechita to change the status of the animal from ishachut to shachut, or izavuach to zavuach. So there might be a mitzvah in doing shechita independent of being a matir. That is a machloket Rishonim, whether shechita is a mitzvah or simply a matir. The simplest way to look at it is as a matir. But even if it's a matir, doesn't mean it's not a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that's not obligatory. It's a mitzvah that if you want to do it, then if you enter into that situation, you must do it in that situation, like get. Tzitzit, also somewhat like that. Tzitzit is very similar in nature to that. Meitve, ha'oseh lulav li'atzmo. One who makes a lulav for himself, mevarech shechiyanu v'kimanu v'higiyanu lezman hazeh. He makes a shechiyanu when he makes a lulav for himself. Ha'oseh lulav here most directly refers to the eged, making the loop or the thing that ties the aret aminim together. That's the putting the mitzvah together, and there you make a shechiyanu. Not lo, let's say it po. If you take it then to perform the mitzvah, omer, asher kidishanu mitzvah v'tzivanu, al nitilat lulav. So, okay, al nitilat lulav. Why are you making al nitilat lulav? You're about to perform the mitzvah. You're obligated to perform the mitzvah of lulav. Why aren't you saying, litol halulav? What's this al nitilat lulav? Again, says shani hotam. The be'idno of the agba nafak be. The moment you pick it up, you're done with the mitzvah. The mitzvah is over instantaneously. And says when you pick it up to make the bracha, you've already done the mitzvah. So you're actually making the bracha after the fact. You're actually not making the bracha beforehand. Gemara says, well, then the wording of this bright is a little strange. Yehochi latzeitbo. Why does it say that you're making the bracha when you're taking it latzeitbo in order to be yotzei the mitzvah? Yatzabo mi baile. Say, I'm making the bracha after already was yotzei the mitzvah. Gemara says, ein hachanami. That's what it means. Because since the second half is talking about leshev basuka, where there it is, let's say it, in the future, tanaration nami let's say it bo. So it uses it as let's say it bo. You are yotzei immediately. So this raises interesting issues with regards to lulav. Lulav, once you picked it up, the mitzvah is done. So the Gemara says here, you make al nitilat lulav because it's after the fact. And therefore, al nitilat lulav, everybody agrees that al has an aspect of avar in the past to it, and therefore it would be appropriate to make the bracha. Now, what about the fact that you have to make brachot over the asiyatan? You have to make a bracha before you perform the mitzvah. So now, that's what Tosafot raises over here. V'im tomar, kevin denofa, keach yivarech. If he's already yotzei, how can he make the bracha? Halo tzorech levarech over the asiyato? Doesn't he have to make a bracha before you do the mitzvah? So v'omeri, afagav denofa, akati osik b'mitzvah. Even though you're already yotzei, you're still involved in the mitzvah. Because you have to shake the lulav when it comes to halel. It's very interesting. This says that the mitzvah of lulav has two aspects to it. One aspect is picking up the lulav, nitilat halulav, which is the mitzvah. The second aspect of lulav is the nanuim, shaking of the lulav. And the shaking of the lulav in Hallel is a part and parcel of the mitzvah according to the Ri. For that reason, I know Rav Soloveitchik was makbid on this, and many people are makbid, to make the bracha on lulav prior to Hallel. There are some that have the minhag in the morning to make it in the sukkah before they come to shul, but the Rav Soloveitchik didn't like that minhag because of what the Ri says over here, that the mitzvah includes both picking up the lulav and the nanuim, the shaking during Hallel. So if you're going to make a bracha on the lulav, you would like to do that, number one, right before Hallel, right before you're going to do the nanuim. So therefore, it makes more sense to pick up the lulav, make the bracha then, and then go straight into Hallel where you're going to do the nanuim, so there won't be a hefsek between the hagbah, picking up the lulav, and doing the nanuim. That's one way to deal with this problem, and that is that the nanuim are part and parcel of the mitzvah, and you haven't completed the mitzvah, so that's why you can still make the bracha. It's still considered to be over la'asiyato. Now, obviously, that has nafka minot in the sense that it's still considered part of the mitzvah, the nanuim. You're not finished with the mitzvah simply by picking it up. The other way to deal with it, and that is the subsequent Tosfot, he says, "Kshadam notel ulav, ein tzarich lofkul." Person takes ulav, he doesn't turn it upside down, which is our practice. Our practice is to turn over the etrog, to pick it up upside down, so you're not yotzei the mitzvah, make bracha, and then flip the etrog over, so then you're holding it in the proper way. Because when you're not holding it in the proper way, you're not yotzei the mitzvah. So there are two other options. And that is either Kepeirish Ri, what the Ri just said now, that the Nanuim and Hallel are part of the mitzvah, and so there it doesn't matter the fact that you picked it up already and make the bracha, because you still have the Nanuim left. The other possibility is you just have in mind not to be Yotzei the mitzvah. When you pick it up, say, I'm not picking this up, not to be Yotzei the mitzvah, you make the bracha, and now you have in mind to be Yotzei the mitzvah, and it'll work. So there are ways to get around it. We have three ways to get around this problem of the bracha. One is to say that the Nanuim are part of the mitzvah, and therefore making the bracha after picking it up is okay. Number two is to say I have in mind when I pick up the lulav not to be yotzei the mitzvah, and then make the bracha and then be yotzei the mitzvah. And the last way is the way that we practice today, which is to take it upside down, to take it not like it's grown, the etrog upside down, make the bracha and then flip it over, and then you're only yotzei the mitzvah after you've made the bracha. Why do we say, the ikar hamitzvah is still accomplished in the first place? We know that the ikar hamitzvah is hagbat lulav. The nanuim, we'll call them shairei mitzvah. They are the Hidur mitzvah, the Sheirei mitzvah, so they're still a part of it, so you can make the bracha on it, but in Ochanami, the Ikar mitzvah is the Hagbah. Oh, when we pick it up upside down, why don't we say Litol? Okay, we'll get to that in a minute, explain why we still say only to left, to left. All right, then, next, Tano, we have this case of Sukkah. Hose Sukkah, this is a Tosefta. We quoted the first half of the Tosefta with regards to Lulav, now we're quoting the second half of the Tosefta with regards to Sukkah. Hose Sukkah latzmo, Omer Baruch, someone who builds a sukkah for themselves makes a shechianu on the sukkah. This is both interesting. We today do not do that. We don't make a bracha on the building of the sukkah. Mr. Brewer brings down that we make that bracha together in kiddush. When we make the shechianu al azman, we also have in mind to make that shechianu on the building of the sukkah and the new mitzvah of the sukkah. We put it all together in one shechianu. But it's clear here from the Tosefta that you make a shechianu on the building of the sukkah, and you also make a shechianu on putting together the lulav. Other mitzvot that are also like this are tzitzit. The making tzitzit would also include a bracha of shechianu, even though the wearing of the tzitzit is the mitzvah. And the question is why? Why are these mitzvot that require shechianu in their process or in the making of them, in the preparation of them? So Netziv has a very interesting chiddush in the commentary on the Shiltot, where he says that these are all hechsher mitzvah haktuva b'Torah. These are hechsheri mitzvah that are actually enumerated in the Torah. It says by tzitzit that you must make tzitzit. By sukkah, it says you must make a sukkah. By lulav, it says you must put together, lakachtem, you have to put together the lulav. So all of these are processes that are mentioned in the Torah, not just the mitzvah itself, but the preparation of the mitzvah is mentioned in the Torah. And since the preparation of the mitzvah is mentioned in the Torah, the shechianu is associated with the preparation because of that. That's the chiddush of the Netziv, that it's a hechsher mitzvah k'tuva b'Torah. What about matzah? Yeah, the obligation of the Torah is to eat matzah. There's no obligation to make matzah in the Torah. Wait, that's a hechsher mitzvah. That's a normal hechsher mitzvah. Every mitzvah requires preparation. So every mitzvah requires preparation doesn't mean that the preparation in and of itself has some sort of significance to it. But when the hechsher mitzvah is written in the Torah specifically, then it takes on a certain amount of significance to it. And that's why the Netziv says in these cases you make the shechianu on the preparation, on tzitzit, on lulav, on sukkah, and all of these items you do make a shechianu on them. It's a sidebar. Just wanted to mention it here because the Tosefta mentions this idea. Where does it say that you have to make a sukkah in the Torah? In Parshat Re'eh, it says, Chag Sukkot Taseh Lecha. So you see there's a Taseh Lecha associated with sukkah, which is a mitzvah to make the sukkah. That's how the Netziv reads it. All right. Nichnas L'sheva. If he goes in to sit in the sukkah, Omer, Baruch Hashem Kedishanu Mitzvah V'Tzivanu, L'sheva Sukkah. That I'm going to sit in the sukkah, L'sheva. That's what we would expect it here. Leshev basukah is to sit in the sukkah to perform the mitzvah. The hilchata, the halacha is al biur chametz. The halacha is that we do make the bracha of al biur chametz. What does that mean? What's the conclusion of the Gemara over here? So Tosfot already introduces the two possibilities of what the conclusion of the Gemara here is, al biur chametz. One possibility of what al biur chametz means over here is that that is the only bracha you can make. Al biur chametz is the proper bracha, and it's the only bracha you can make over here is al biur chametz. The other possibility is that al biur chametz is also okay. Levarer chametz is the better bracha, but al biur chametz is the other option that you could use over here or utilize over here. So Tosfot brings both possibilities down about the hilchata al biur chametz. So then, the halacha, what's going on over here? So the Rishonim try to deal with this Gemara. This Gemara is very difficult. This Gemara tries to give us information about brachot, and so the Rishonim try very hard to categorize brachot and to say when do we say al and when do we say le. The Ran gives the most significant or the most accepted definition or division between when we say al and when we say le. Found the Ran and Daf Gimel fellow and the Rif, and there he says, I'll explain to you what the difference is. Say mitzvot halalu. When you have a mitzvah that can be done by other people, you could do the mitzvah, or you can have a proxy or an agent do the mitzvah for you. In that case, everybody agrees that the other individual must make the bracha al. If you're not the one who's obligating the mitzvah, you can't make the bracha of le, you must make the bracha of al. Number two is, if it's a mitzvah that only you can perform, a mitzvah that's your obligation, you must do it, and no one else can do it on your behalf. There, we make the bracha of le. So that's the chiluk that the Ran says. The Ran says, if it's your mitzvah, and your mitzvah solely, and you're the one obligated to the mitzvah, make le. Al is used when someone else can perform the mitzvah on your behalf, then al. The machloket here in our Gemara is in a case where someone else can perform the mitzvah, but you yourself do the mitzvah. So where someone else could perform the mitzvah for you, and you do the mitzvah, which is the better way to make the bracha? Le, because that's reflective of your obligation in the mitzvah. Or al, because al tells us this information, that this mitzvah could have been performed by someone else. And number two, it doesn't necessarily have to be over the asiatan in this type of case. Which one is the better approach? And the Gemara is hilchata al biur. That in a case where someone else performed the mitzvah for you, we're better off making the bracha of al. And al will be where someone else can do it. Le will be the case when you're the one obligated and the only one can do the mitzvah. The problem is that the Ran lays out this beautiful division. And then he has another whole page of exceptions to the rule, things that don't fit into the rule. And that's the problem that's mentioned here in Tosafot. The Ri himself mentions it on the page. And it's interesting for the Ri to say something like this. V'yesh tam bebrachot. There's a reason for the difference in the brachot. But then the Ri says about that, V'ri lo matzatam d'chol brachot. He could never find something that categorically defined every one of the brachot. And so the Ri, the Bali Tosafot, who are the ultimate in division and breaking things down into different parts, the Ri says, I can't do it. I can't figure it out. Why? Why can't the Ri figure it out? Why can't the Ran figure out? Why can nobody figure it out? So I heard once from Rav Meir Lichtenstein, it makes a lot of sense, which is the development of brachot. Brachot are an institution de Rabbanan. They're an institution de Rabbanan that does not happen in a single time. It's not an institution de Rabbanan where we say, okay, we are now going to institute brachot, and they went and they instituted all the brachot. The brachot and the mitzvot develop over time. We see that in Memrot, in the Gemara. We see that in Memrot that come into the Rishonim, that brachot develop over time, and it was not a structured development. It was type of evolution within the process of making brachot. So now what we're trying to do after the fact is come back and figure out what was the mindset or the methodology that they used to institute it. But it wasn't that way. There wasn't a mindset or methodology that was in place, and then they made the brachot. The brachot were all made, and now they're trying to go backwards and retroactively trying to figure out the categories. And basically, that's going to be impossible because it didn't really follow any logical scheme. They tried to basically fit into logical schemes, but then after the fact, you're always going to have exceptions because it was an evolutionary type of development rather than a disciplined type of development. And because of that, you can come up with a broad explanation like the Ran does over here, but you're not going to come up with a total solution, as the Ri says, because you're always going to have exceptions to the rule. All right, now, with regards to Birkat HaMitzvah, which is what we're discussing over here, the question is, why are there Birkat HaMitzvah? What is the idea? What is Birkat HaMitzvah? So there are three approaches to what a Birkat HaMitzvah is. One approach to Birkat HaMitzvah is Kavanah, that intent. It helps the person with the intent and to know that they're doing the mitzvah for L'shem Hashem, they're doing it for the right reasons. So it's part and parcel of the Hineni Muchan, that you say beforehand, you say a bracha, that is the Hineni Muchan. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that it's Shevach, Ve'odah LaHashem, giving Shevach to Hashem, praise to Hashem, that He allowed us to perform the mitzvah. There is a chiddush again by Rav Soloveitchik. It's a very big chiddush. He does it based on the Rambam. The Rambam connects between Birkat Hanenin, Birkat HaMitzvot. We know by Birkat Hanenin from the Gemara in Brachot and Perek Shishi that the reason you have to make a bracha is so that you're not stealing from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that you're not taking what doesn't belong to you. And most people view that as a matir. In order to eat, you must make a bracha. Without the bracha, you haven't been matir, the object to be eaten. You can't get hanah from it until you've acknowledged that it came from Hashem. So when the Rambam puts the two together, Rav Soloveitchik suggests a big chiddush that Birkat HaMitzvot are also a matir. They work in the same method or in the same type of way, which is that Birkat HaMitzvah are matir. We take as a given that we can perform mitzvot. Mitzvot allow us to approach Hashem, allow us a spiritual elevation, allow us to connect to Hashem. We take it for granted that you can do that, but that's not so simple. Who says that you're allowed to do that? Who says you're allowed to come close to Hashem? You need a matir. The Birkat HaMitzvah might be exactly that, the matir that allows one to perform a mitzvah and get close to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's the Chiddush of Rav Soloveitchik in understanding Birkat HaMitzvah. The Birkat HaMitzvah is a matir. So now we have three, again, approaches to Birkat HaMitzvah. One is Kavanah, one is Shevach, and then one is a matir. There is a machloket here between the Baal HaMor and the Rambam with regards to when the optimal time to make a bracha is. The Rambam, and we're going to see this in the Gemara in a second, says the optimal time to make a bracha is beforehand. You should always make the bracha before you perform the mitzvah. Now, if you hold like the Rambam, then it makes a lot of sense. If it's for Kavanat HaMitzvah, makes a lot of sense that you do it beforehand. If, like Rav Soloveitchik says, it's a matir, then for sure you'd have to say it before, and he bases it out of the Rambam, would make a lot of sense. The Baal HaMor, on the other hand, says that the optimal time to make the bracha is during the mitzvah, while you're performing the mitzvah. There happens to be a technical problem with mitzvot that have no duration to them. Mitzvot that have no duration to them, you have to make the bracha beforehand, because you can't make it while you're doing the mitzvah. The mitzvah's over before you can make the bracha. So because of that technical problem, we make the Birkat HaMitzvah beforehand. But otherwise, the best way to make a Birkat HaMitzvah is while you're doing the mitzvah. For instance, in Sukkah, you sit in the Sukkah, and then you make the bracha of Leishev BaSukkah. You're in the midst of performing the mitzvah. So that would be interesting, because then the Birkat HaMitzvah would not necessarily be Kavana, would not necessarily be a matir. It could be Shevach LaHashem. You could explain it that way. Or it also might be a way to bind all mitzvot together. Very interesting idea that every mitzvah we know has a particular tikkun, a particular spiritual type of aspiration that a person connects to Hashem. But there is a common denominator between all the mitzvot, and that is Asher Kiddishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu, that God commanded us to do them. And if God's commanding us to do them, that is the common denominator between all the mitzvot. And making the bracha while you do the mitzvah might be a way to enhance, display, understand that commonality between all the mitzvot of Asher Kiddishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu, that God has commanded us, that common denominator between all the mitzvot. And that's why it might be more appropriate to make Birkat HaMitzvah during the mitzvah. And that would also have to do with what the Hilchot of the Gemara is over here, the Hilchot HaBiur Chametz. What does it mean, Hilchot HaBiur Chametz? Does Hilchot HaBiur Chametz mean that's the only way you can make a bracha, Al Biur Chametz? And Livaer is the wrong way to do the mitzvah over here. Al Biur Chametz is the only way to do the mitzvah. Or are there choices here? If you do it beforehand, you could say Livaer. If you do it during the mitzvah, maybe you could say Al Biur. So that also might relate to when you make the Birkat HaMitzvah as to whether you say Livaer or Al Biur. So that's just a little overview of the different approaches to Birkat HaMitzvah and to the ideas behind why we make the bracha beforehand. Now, the Gemara continues and says that the underlying assumption in our Gemara here is that all brachot must be made beforehand. So that's what it says. The Kuli Amamiya Mikara Bein on the Bruchet. You must make a bracha before you perform the mitzvah. Minolan. Where do you know that from? To Amar Rav Yehuda Mashmo, we have a memra from Amar Yehuda Mashmo, Kol HaMitzvot Mevarech Aleim Over LeAsiyatan. Every mitzvah must be made, or bracha must be made on the mitzvah, over the asiyatan. Now we know the word over the asiyatan means prior, but how do we know that? And that's what the Gemara is going to search for now. How do we know over the asiyatan means prior to the mitzvah? My mashma. How does over the asiyatan mean beforehand? Tahai over lishna dagdumehu. That over means prior. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Damar Korah. We're looking for a source in the pasuk that uses the term over to mean beforehand. In the case in Shmuel Bet, vayaratz achimatz derech hakikar vayavoret hakushi. Case after Avshalom is killed by Yoav. Yoav sends the Kushi to tell David the news, and Achimatz insists that he wants to tell David the news. He thinks it's going to be great news. Yoav says to him, Lo yom besorahi. This is not the day you want to be bringing the news. Achimatz insists that he's going to do it. In the end, Yoav says, go ahead. And Achimatz overtakes the Kushi, passes him and gets to David first, and he finds out for himself how good the news is, that David is not really going to want to hear this type of news. But here it says, Vayavur, that he passed Vayavurat HaKushi means he passed. He got in front of. He got ahead of the Kushi. So here you see the word over being used as being prior or before. This is by Yaakov and his family when they meet Esav. And it says that it's all his family there. And it says Yaakov passed in front of them to go to meet Esav or to greet Esav. So again, the word avar is being used in the context of going prior or before. That it comes here from the pasuk in Micha. That their king went before them. The king being Melech HaMashiach went before them. Vashem Brosham, and Hashem was carrying them all along. But again, Vayavur Malkam means that he passed in front of them. He was prior to them. There are two exceptions to this rule. All brachot are made over the Asiatan, with two exceptions. Tvila, going to the mikveh, and blowing the shofar. Where it says, Bishlama Tvila, I understand what the problem is with Tvila. Dakata Gavra Delo Chazi. This is a person who is not ra'ui to make a bracha now. Elo shofar, my time. What's the problem with the shofar? Now, what is so obvious about tefillah that you can't make the bracha? Rashi claims it's a bal keri here. Person's a bal keri, and it's by the time of Gezerah to Ezra, we are not allowed to make a bracha when you're a bal keri. So when you go into the mikveh, you're not ready to make the bracha. You're only ready to make the bracha after you come out of the mikveh. So that's why you have to make the bracha afterwards. Tosafot rejects Rashi's understanding that we're talking about a bal keri here, and he says we're talking about tefillah to ger. Talking about a convert. A convert that goes to the mikveh, he can't make the bracha of a friend. He's not a Jew. He can't say Asher Kedishanu Mitzvah Tivanu before he goes to the mikveh. He can only say it after he goes to the mikveh. So it's a practical issue. You have to say it after the fact. But shofar, the Gemara says, my time, why do you have to make the bracha on shofar afterwards? Maybe he won't get the sound out of the shofar. He's going to blow the shofar, he won't succeed. Then how do you make a bracha before shkita, before mila? Who says you're going to get it right? Who says it's going to work? So Nami, so in those cases also you should say it afterwards. Only the exception to the rule is tefillah. Tanya Nami Hochi, a brayta that supports this. Taval v'ala. Person goes to the mikveh and comes out. When he comes out of the mikveh, he says, Baruch Asher Kedishanu B'mitzvah V'tzivanu Al HaTvilah. It makes the bracha of Al HaTvilah. What it seems from this Gemara over here is that the bracha of Tvilah is only said after the fact with regards to either according to Rashi of a Bal Keri or by Tosafot for someone who is a ger. Tosafot already raises the issue here that the women go to the mikveh and they're coming out of the mikveh and they're making the bracha afterwards. He says, don't stop them. It's okay. They should be also making the bracha afterwards because of a din called Loplug. We don't want to make a differentiation. Since the act is the exact same act, therefore we make everyone make the bracha afterwards so that in the case where it's problematic, we'll know to make the bracha afterwards. And he says another example of that is al nitilat yadayim, making the bracha on yadayim. How can you make al nitilat yadayim after you wash your hands? Why don't you make it before you wash your hands? He says because there's a case where it doesn't work when you go to the bathroom. When you go to the bathroom, you can't make the bracha of nitilat yadayim before you wash your hands because you're in the bathroom. You're going to make the bracha after you've washed your hands. You're now clean. You can say al nitilat yadayim. So since in the case where you're in the bathroom, you're going to make the Al Nitilat Yadayim afterwards, so therefore, all times that we wash our hands, we make the bracha of Al Nitilat Yadayim after the fact. It says it's an issue of lo plug. Tosfot then rejects that idea by Al Nitilat Yadayim. He says the possibility is by Al Nitilat Yadayim, there's more than just washing your hands. It's the mitzvah. The mitzvah also might be niguv, drying your hands. So therefore, you're making the bracha between the washing and the niguv and the drying, so you're in the midst of the mitzvah when you make the bracha, and therefore it still is over the Asiatan. But Tosfot leaves it in place that with regards to tefillah, with regards to mikveh, that it's low plug and you should make the bracha on the mikveh afterwards. This has a major nafkamino and a machloket, which has nothing to do with this case in Tosafot, but this Tosafot is cited as a pivotal point in that machloket. Marat Bela. Marat Bela was the wife of the Drisha, the Prisha, who said that women make a big mistake when they make bracha on their Yom Tov candles. When they make bracha on Yom Tov candles, why are they making the bracha after they light the candles? They should make the bracha before they light the candles. On Shabbat, I understand why they don't make the bracha beforehand, because if you do Kabbalat Shabbat, you can't light the candles afterwards. But by Yom Tov, the Havarat Eish is okay. You can transfer fire. So why don't you make Birkat Lakat Neirot a Yom beforehand and then light the candles for Yom Tov? Shouldn't be a problem at all. And therefore, she paskined, and she's the first to do this. And then the Rishonim take this up, and the argument always really revolves around this statement of Marat Bela. The Magen Avraham takes issue with her and says she's wrong. You know why she's wrong? This Tosafot. This Tosafot says Lo Plug. So therefore, the Magen Avraham says Lo Plug between Shabbat and Yom Tov. So we're going to make the bracha after the fact. There are others that reject that Magen Avraham. One of the reasons is because it's different. Shabbat and Yom Tov are completely different things. And what's a proof to that is Nerot Chanukah. Nobody makes the bracha on Nerot Chanukah after the fact. Everybody makes bracha on Nerot Chanukah before the fact. We don't say Lo Plug over there. And therefore, it's proper to make the bracha for Nerot Yom Tov before one lights the Nerot Yom Tov. It's a big machloket. We discussed it back in the Gemara and Shabbat. But this Tosfot is a pivotal makor in that machloket with regards to whether on Yom Tov, the bracha should be made before or after one lights the candles. Men probably should make the bracha beforehand. They should have in mind that they're not mekabel Shabbat, but most likely there, the Tanai works. It might work automatically. They may not have to state anything. and therefore men almost definitely should make the bracha beforehand. You should know that Rav Avadi Yosef paskins for Sfaradim, that they should make bracha beforehand, and that it's completely wrong to make the bracha after the fact. For that he says, because there it's an identical maaseh. By tefillah, you can't differentiate tefillah. Tefillah, every tefillah looks the same. You go into the mikveh, you walk out of the mikveh, nothing looks different. By lucha neirot and Shabbat, and lucha neirot and Yom Tov, it's different. You know why? On Shabbat, you're lighting the candles beforehand. On Yom Tov, you can be lighting the candles on Yom Tov itself. So between men and women, it's a distinction, because men don't usually light the candles. So you may not say low plug over there. I mean, that you have to be, low plug is a problem where we say that this is going to be the common practice and everybody's going to do it. Over here, the man doesn't usually light the candles, and therefore they may not say low plug. You could argue that it's low plug, but I don't think it's necessary to say that over here that it's low plug. You could make the bracha afterwards. All right, lower on there, that you have to do b'dika lower on there. Minahani milay. Where do you know the fact that you have to make or do b'dika lower on there? Minahani merbi chista. Lamadu mitzia mimtzia. Mitzia michipus. Michipus michipus. Michipus mineirot. Mineirot miner. A pretty long gzera shava, which is. Let's do it. Mitzia mimtzia. Where's that? Tiv halchashivat yamim sor lo yimatzei bevatechem. That's one mitzia. Then Ktiv Hotam, it says over there, by Yosef. After Yosef sends the brothers home and he hides his goblet in the sack of Binyamin, it says there the Eved of Yosef chases him down. Vayichapes, he looks into their sack. Begadol Heichel, he starts with the oldest. Ubekatan Kila, and he ends with the youngest, meaning Binyamin. Vayimatzei, and then he finds the Gviah in Binyamin's sack. So there you have Tziah, Mitziah. Umitziah Michipus Didei. And then here, in that Pasuk itself, it has the word Mitziah and Chipus found in that same Pasuk. Vichipus Mineirot. So you see the word chipus now associated with neirot, that God will check Yerushalayim with candles. That Ne'er Hashem is Nishmat Adam, that does investigates, looks into all the depths of the individual. So Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, we have a braita that supports this. Leila Yudalid Botkim et Chametz Lo'ra Ne'er. On the night of the 14th, you check the Chametz Lo'ra Ne'er. Afal Pi She'en Raya LaDavar, even though there's no proof to this. Zecher de Davar, there is a mention of this, there's an asmachta to this. Shenemar, and that's our what we just quoted over here. Shivat Yamim Sor Lo Yimatzei Bevatechem, Veomer, Vechapes, Begadol Heichel, Vakatan Kila. So there again, that's Mitziah, Mitziah. And then within the Pasuk by Yosef, it says Mitziah and Chipus. And then we move, Veomer, Beitai, Achpes et Yerushalayim Beneirot. Veomer, and it also says, Ner Hashem Nishmat Adam, Chofes Kol Chajay Boten. My Veomer, why do I need two psukim connect between Chipus and Ner? Vechitei Mahai Beitai. That pasuk that we quoted from Tzfanya that talks about Beit Yachabes Yerushalayim b'nei Ro'ot, Da'ai Kubahu, there Hashem's being lenient. The Kamar Rachmana, Hashem says, Lo, b'dikin ala b'Yerushalayim b'nei Ora Da'avuka. I'm not going to check Yerushalayim with torches. The Nafish Nehora Tuvah, which has a lot of light. Ela b'nei Ora Shraga, I'm just going to use a candle. So I'll only find the Zutar Nehora Tvei that has a small light to it. Da'avon Rabba Mishtakach. If there's a big sins, I'll find them because I'm only using a little light. Avon zuta lo mishtakach, but little sins I'll pass over, I'll ignore them. So that's why I'm using smaller light than bigger light. It's a kulua that Hashem said. If that's what you want to explain the pasuk that way, so then using a ner is not necessarily associated with chipus. Over there, the chipus is done with neirot in order to be lenient on Klal Yisrael. But really, chipus should be done with an avuka, with a torch. So then I have the second pasuk to prove to you that tashma, ner Hashem, nishmat adam, again, that the term chipus is used together with ner to show you that there is a connection between how do you do investigating, how do you search? You search with neirot. So based on that, we have mitziah, that you're not allowed to find chametz on Pesach. Not allowed to find chametz. We connect that to Yosef that says by finding, you have to search. And then we take that searching and we say, well, how do you search? And the pasuk in Tzfanya tells us you search with neirot. If you want to tell me that pasuk in Tzfanya is a kula, and that searching is not usually with neirot, but rather with an avuka, the torch, I have also the pasuk in Mishlei, which seconds that and says that chipus is done with neirot. And that's how I know that on the night of b'dikah, how do you do b'dikah? You do b'dikah with neirot. The modern day equivalent would be a flashlight, which avoids many of the problems associated with using a candle, fire, danger, and the inability to get close to objects, and gives you the directed light that we're looking for through a candle. Okay, we'll stop over here.